Yo, this is Nappy Boy Radio Live with your boy T-Pain. We love rap music. Listen, we got a caller on line one. Caller, what's your problem?
Hello. I'm on the radio with T-Pain.
How's it going?
It ain't going good. My girl ain't doing the thing she used to do at all.
I got just what you need. Brand new Chris Brown, T-Pain. You heard it here first. Nappy Boy Radio. We love you.
She want that loving, 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 loving. Kiss, 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 kiss.
Hi, this is John Amison, owner. Welcome to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented to you by the Psychologist Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that is timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I bemoaned the fact that I've kind of drifted away from doing themes, that is, one serious article or a particular topic, and then kind of honed in on that. I've tried to correct that by doing the last podcast, or an earlier podcast. I won't say it was the last one because I don't know when I'll post this one, but one on the Zimbardo issue and the Stanford Prison experiment. And today I thought I'd kind of stick with this because the American Psychological Association did a real quick article under their the auspices of what they call services. APA has a whole bunch of little bloggy areas, and I go through these and forage around, and I found this topical area, evidence-based strategies for treating chronic pain. So what they did is grab some articles that were out recently, the same way I might look for them, and put them together, so it makes it kind of easy for me at this point. All right, so the first article I want to talk about was in Rehabilitation Psychology 2019, and essentially says... they were looking at two groups of people and two studies. Each of the groups had chronic pain. The first were 220 individuals with fibromyalgia, and the second was 483 individuals, long-term neurological neuromuscular disease injury, and chronic pain over an extended period of time. They looked at three groups, subgroups of individuals in the pain cohorts, high, moderate, and low personal resource groups, and found that people in the low personal resource group had significantly lower income than those in the other two groups and had a greater degree of suffering. So what they were coming up with in this is that personal resource is a mitigating factor against suffering in relation to chronic pain. In other words, if you have low personal resource, and that includes financial resource, interpersonal resource, a personal resilient character, and then sleep quality, that you're having poor patterns of sleep, you will suffer more. So the issue then is, how can you increase personal resource and move people from a low personal resource group toward a higher one, as opposed to just simply pharmacological treatment? Because if you can imagine, the low personal research group, those people that were disconnected from social support systems of any sort, that had a lower socioeconomic status, that had fewer means to mitigate or distract from pain and suffering, were at greater risk. In a second study in this blog, they were looking at an article that was in Social Science and Medicine, and close relationships as a contributor to chronic pain, pathogenesis, predicting pain, etiology, persistence. And what they found, which would be understandable, but you know, we still need to talk about these things. Individuals who were in families where there was unreliability, criticism, and hostility, and eye rolling around the suffering of a family member, that the suffering was greater and the pain was experienced at a much more severe level. So they argue here that there ought to be family treatment and family support for the individuals who are suffering from chronic pain, and then the promotion of an environment that is motivating relative to that chronic pain as opposed to disparaging. Finally, in the last article, the journal was in Appetite, and it was called Discomfort Eating. And they looked at 151 adults with chronic pain, and they were doing a survey with them, and they found that 75% of the participants engaged in comfort eating in response to chronic pain. And while it didn't, well, pain intensity did not exactly predict comfort eating, there was evidence to support an indirect relationship between chronic pain intensity, pain-induced comfort, and pain-induced comfort eating through stress. And I read from their article. In other words, it was the stress associated with pain rather than pain itself that appears to have driven the participants to seek food for comfort. In other words, if we go back to our other two things, a low resource base and family disharmony, and all the things that would go with that would cause a person to be more likely to engage in comfort eating around chronic pain. All right, so we'll let House of Pain march us out.